Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Did somebody say playoffs? The NBA, MLB? And then our children are full swinging our partners a better line of great cover. No, I am not. I'm not stupid. So take advantage of sports being back and get in on the action with hundreds of odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and sign up to receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's betonline.ag. Welcome, Antigua listeners, and sign up today. Betonline.ag, sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I'm Derek Riley. I'm a Charlie Smith, and welcome to Dirty Water, a favourite corridor where life loves to stroll. Today's guest on Dirty Water is a journalist, dramatist, and surfer who lives in exile at Lennox Head, a great white-infested point in northeast Australia. His keen eagle face, always crowned by a $300 Italian hat, has made him a striking personality to the public imagination, while his work under the nom de plume Long Tom brings him into close daily communion with hundreds and thousands of his fellow surfers of all ranks and conditions. Our guest, Mr. Stephen Shearer.
Thank you, Derek. It's another amazing introduction. I feel totally humbled and embarrassed by that.
I feel like I'm running out of steam, running out of adjectives and metaphors and descriptions.
Yeah, you never seem to fail to find a way to exceed your last one, so well done for that.
Thank you, sir. So you're telling me that you've just been dissecting your baby goat.
Yes, correct.
Baby goat.
How old?
Well, it's age. It's the age of consent. But also, yeah. How do you dissect a baby goat?
Well, you've got to catch it and then you sort of lay it down. We called a vet in for the operation. He gave it a needle, put it to sleep, and then he just sort of lifted its back legs up, mate, and got the scalpel in there and just chopped the balls out one at a time.
Why do you dissect a baby goat? What is a male goat? What terror does a male goat wreak upon the world?
Well, mate, there's a lot. There's a long list. It's a laundry list. So headbutts, just raping and pillaging anything that moves, it will have a go at anything, basically.
What what if you just had a petting zoo full of sexed male goats?
We have an unsexed male goat in the paddock. We thought it was a female and it turns out it's a male.
What happened?
Well, we got these two Melbourne lesbians up here coming up to look after the place, and this female goat squatted back down and pissed all over this male goat's face, and then it started like shaking its head around. She said, "Oh, that's a male goat. That's male goat behavior." And yeah, sure enough, all the goats are pregnant and we've got a male goat in the paddock.
Did the lesbian say it contemptuously when she said male goat behavior?
No, not at all.
No, they're excited by the goat penis pissing on the other male?
Well, I don't know about excited. It was more just a sort of acknowledgement of reality.
Fuck, it's weird up there, Stephen.
Yeah.
I mean, you're dissecting baby goats and you've got your lesbian pals up there watching goats piss on another goat. And that's a nice little seg into the many, many things we have to talk about today. But let's open up with stalkers. So Stephanie Gilmore brought rightfully the cops down on a 66-year-old man who had a stay-away order from her, and who was allegedly bumped into her at the Tweed Heads contest. Yep. And of course, Steph was attacked and her, you know, wrist was busted by a junkie back in 2010.
Yeah.
And Nick Fanning's alleged stalker, meanwhile, was back before the courts ripping off her tracking device that had been attached because she'd allegedly been stalking Mick. So why does the detritus of humanity live on the North Coast and the Gold Coast?
Oh, I think it's the climate. It's just sort of cheap, easy living. So people who are sort of on the fringes can sort of find a place to sleep every night, and, you know, it just takes away one less consideration of life. So if you're just tweaked out and whacked out, you can sort of forge out a little existence here. It's like Mexico in the States.
I mean, have you ever thought about stalking anyone, Steve?
That's a really good question. Probably you, Chaz.
Please. Derek, have you ever had a stalker?
Yeah, I've had a couple of chicks that wouldn't rack off. Yeah. Not full on stalking though.
Did you feel honored by it or did you feel scared?
No, honored. Yeah. You know, and as a child, because I watched a lot of horror films when I was a child, I always thought I'd be murdered in my bed sometime. So by the time it sort of happened in my adult years, I was quite excited by it. I was flattered that anyone would bother to follow.
Reading that Stephanie Gilmore story, like when I read about stalkers, typically I think, yeah, it's kind of funny. But that one, for some reason, did not sound funny.
Yep.
No, that was creepy as fuck, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It really had a Deliverance air to it.
Yeah.
What just, is about, you know, Steph that seems to attract stalkers?
Well, she's just everywhere. She's gorgeous. She's everywhere. She seems really friendly. And I think friendliness and being perceived as friendly attracts creeps.
Yeah.
They think you're smiling at them. They think you're talking to them. Not that this, you know, the alleged blah, 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 creep, alleged. But, you know, poor old Steph.
Yeah.
You know, wrist busted by a schizophrenic junkie in the stairwell of a house and of an apartment building, and the latest one. You know, no wonder she's living in Malibu.
Yeah, yeah. No white sharks either, or not as many.
Funny down in San Clemente though.
Yeah,
it's been some footage lately of you know, the whites swimming around down there. So Steve, did you watch the Tweed Coast Pro?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, most of it.
How did you bring yourself to do that? I know you had to write a story for us, but you weren't put to sleep by it?
Yeah, look, it was I think you'd have to give it a pass, just a pass mark. I mean, the surf was pretty tragic and, you know, there was a couple of questions I wanted to see answered. I wanted to see if Ethan Ewing is in fact a CT surfer or whether he's just a QS surfer. That question remains unanswered. I wanted to see Jack Robbo surf. And I just wanted to see what the Australian arm of the WSL could put out there as far as production goes.
And what were your conclusions?
I think the Blakey brothers just, I mean, did you listen to any of that Brazilian comp this morning or watch any of that?
The LED rails and the night contest. I watched a bit of it.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It wasn't really for me, I don't think, Steve.
Yeah. Really, actually, I thought while I was watching it, this is perfect for Derek.
Oh, fuck. The whole notion of surf contests, they just seem so endless and boring and, oh, fuck. And then you get reminded of how shit-ass they are when the Tweed Coast Pro's on, you know?
Yeah, novelty makes it worse, actually.
Yeah, yeah, true, true. And
with the Tweedy Coast and the rest of them,
yeah,
I wonder, is professional surfing done? Who needs it anymore?
Yeah, well, no one. That's the problem.
I mean, it's such an utter bore. At least long format, whatever it's called, cricket and all that, right? There's something there. I don't see what exists in professional surfing anymore that's worth even turning it on.
So are we already in the post-professional surfing era? Is it too early to call it?
I mean, when it comes back, will you be excitedly on the edge of your seat tuning in?
No, I'm sort of watching it in a disinterested sort of fashion, and you know, just sort of like the fall of the Roman Empire kind of thing. I'm looking for that angle.
That's beautiful.
Not that it was ever the Roman Empire. I mean, that's a really bad analogy, but the fall of the, what?
I mean, some percent the fall of the village somewhere.
Hey? Maybe the fall of the Third Reich. That only lasted, that only lasted 15 years, didn't it?
Yeah. I know, but there's, I mean, could you compare pro surfing to the Third Reich in any way? I mean, I'd love to, but
Derek and I try pretty regularly, but all we ever get back to, I think, is the Stasi East Germany.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the concept of Lebensraum, right, living room, then I guess maybe Herrenvolk. Sort of, hey?
For the Lebensraum for the Herrenvolk.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, going back to the original point, I think Australians do pro surfing better than Americans. Chaz?
Did I cut in?
No.
You, this is funny.
I think Australians do sport in general than Americans, right? Like, oh, I think only big over-the-top sports work here. You got NBA, NFL, and then Major League Baseball, and that's it. No other sport. You know, UFC, I think, works.
Yep.
As a spectacle. But, you know, aside from that, I don't think Americans are that sporting. Australians are quintessentially sporting.
Yeah, I just think that, yeah, as far as like the packaging up and the tone of it goes, I just think Australians have still got that tiny little bit of sort of mongrel, you know, that just that tiny little bit of larrikinism. Like when I hear the two Blakey brothers commentate, that's easier on my ear than hearing like Joe Turpel and some other American, you know what I mean? It just sounds better. It's more real.
I mean, but the Blakeys are, I feel, at the top of their games, unfortunately. Yeah. Top of their games at the fall of professional surfing. They should go off and call something else.
Yeah, they'll find another way. I mean, the other good thing about the fall of pro surfing is there's all these other little sort of tidbits popping up now. You know, you got the Rivals thing and then that Stab thing that they're doing, the Live 100 and all these other little things popping up, which is great, I reckon.
What did you think of Rivals, Dev?
I loved it at the start, but I think that the talent's not quite carrying some of the episodes. You know, so some of them are a bit flat, but, you know, I love Jed Smith's commentary. That carries it for me.
For people who aren't aware, Rivals is an Australian-made TV series where a group of middle-aged retired Australian surfers challenge each other, and they have a month or something to get two waves.
Yeah,
their favorite spot or something. And there's Nathan Hedge and there's Sean Canstell, Mick Fanning, Joel Parkinson, Kai Otten. Who else?
Dean Morrison.
Oh, Steve Morrison as well. Oh, yep. Bede Durbidge as well.
Bede Durbidge, yeah. Bede's episode is on right now, midday.
I imagine that's melting down the servers at Channel 9, whoever's running it. It's like a joke, isn't it? The whole concept seems like a bad joke.
Yeah. I know, but it's sort of pulling it off. I don't know how many people are watching it. I really don't.
No one watches free-to-air television, huh?
No, I wouldn't think so.
So, Stephen, were you watching the Tweed Heads Pro, and you must have been because you watched all of it, when the Sharks went through the lineup?
No, I was actually listening to that. I was listening to the broadcast through the car. I was driving while it happened.
And how did the commentators react when everyone had to get on the skis because a great white was swimming through the lineup?
Yeah, pretty relaxed. But at least I think they felt confident in saying the word shark. I mean, it would have been cool to have Joe Turpel on. That was the one time where I was wishing, where's Joe? They need to do a live cross to Joe right now.
Because everyone's jumping on the skis and resetting, huh?
Exactly.
So sharks are very much in the consciousness of
Joe
people.
Was nowhere to be found.
So, Steve, sharks are very much in the consciousness of everyone on the North Coast at the moment, the Gold Coast.
Yep.
So you had the foreboarder hit by a great white described as a tank at Cabarita last Thursday. On the same day, a broken head, another tank, 15 foot or whatever, bumped a guy, swam through the line of 50 guys.
Yeah.
There's a 12 footer swimming around Talabudra River, that little strip of water that cuts Palm Beach from Burley Heads.
Yeah.
Here guys are chased out. You got a 50 foot dead sperm whale bleeding at Ballina.
Yeah. So
someone's already hacked off the jaws.
Yeah.
The White's obviously thrilled. And then, obviously, 2 weeks ago, Nick Slater killed at the Superbank.
Mm.
Wild times.
Yeah, yeah. Totally wild times.
So how does that affect you?
I'm not surfing those fucking Outer Bank beach breaks anymore. It's like I'm just surfing point breaks and good waves. So I actually haven't done much surfing since Nick got taken, sort of mostly because the surf's been shit. I've done a few laps of the pass with the kids. I've done a bit of splash and giggle here and there, but I haven't really had any proper surf since he was taken. It just feels too sharky for surf dribble in.
And how do you feel with your kids going surfing?
Edgy. Edgy as fuck.
So tell me, when Nick was taken, there was footage kicking around from the Swellnet cams and the Coastal Watch cams of the attack.
Yeah.
And we ran the footage, sort of Stab and all the tabloids, newspapers and whatever.
Yeah.
Someone texted to us and, you know, a lot of people thought it was the wrong thing to do. Nick Carroll described us, I suppose it was, as savages.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think images change the world, you know. Yeah. A little migrant boy, little Alan Curdy when he's washed up on that beach. You know, the South Vietnamese chick with the skin peeling off, covered in napalm, you know, the Biafran arm.
Yeah.
You know, there was footage of Tadashi in whatever 2010, whatever it was. And that was wiped. yeah, there's plenty of shots of sharks being, you know, pulled off the lines, whatever. How do you feel about it? It feels like if people can see what's happening, because it's ugly as fuck, there might be a stronger response to the clear aggregation of great whites in your area.
Yeah, I don't know actually how. I totally agree with you that the image is more powerful than the word or anything written, and those images have been defining and have changed things, but I'm just not so sure whether, I mean, you know, Mick Fanning's about to bring his documentary out and, you know, he's been in full pitch mode for that, and that's going to take the opposite message that, you know, sharks are all cute and cuddly and we need to protect them. And so it's just two competing narratives. It's just become part of the culture war, this incredibly polarized narrative that white sharks are just these gentle, misunderstood creatures that don't want anything to do with us. And then on the other hand, you know, you've got these savage attacks and people getting legs bitten off and bleeding to death in the water. And there doesn't seem to be any middle ground where we can just accept the fact that this is a opportunistic apex ambush predator. It's even if it's not, the population as a whole isn't increasing, they're just abundant in certain areas at certain times of the year. And I don't know, there doesn't seem to be any recognition of those basic facts. So whether this is going to change anything, whether the images are going to change anything, I'm not sure, but I think at least it's given people an idea of just how violent the attack is. I mean, you know, this was no little sort of just bite and spit. This thing was just charging at him.
Yeah. It's crazy, or catches me off guard, I suppose. The amount of shark stories Beach Grit has done,
yeah,
is legendary at this point. Mm-hmm. But it catches me off guard still that when one of them really hits, in terms of, I guess, going viral outside of the typical, you know, Beach Grit's typical community, that it's about 20-1. 30-1 comments of "you're an idiot." These, you know, you're playing in their world. These are gentle creatures. Blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. Right? Which, yep. I mean, if pit bulls were hitting kids, I mean, maybe I guess people would say, well, the pit bulls are fine and whatever. But it feels like humans cull creatures, by and large, that do wrong. And I don't know what it is about the great white that inspires people to think that, I don't know, that it's a kind, loving creature that needs to be. I mean, of course, like, I'm not about or don't want to go kill them all, but my goodness, if they're hitting people at popular surf breaks, then take them out. Take them all out right there. Go fishing and catch as many as you can.
Yeah. I think this is my theory, that it's the great white sharks become sort of like the whale of this era. And it's just for people who just look at humanity and think, oh, you know, we're just a cancer on the planet and we're just killing everyone, slaughtering the, you know, the great white shark is this just kind of avenging spirit for that sort of deeply misanthropic, you know, strain that runs through that thinking. And so they're just like, yeah, fuck yeah, this thing's taking people out, fucking great. You know, they might not come out and say that, but I think that's what's coming out in those comments. Some people do come out and say it. You will read comments in there and say, yeah, fucking humans are the cancer, these fucking sharks should wipe us all out. I don't know. What do you think about that, Derek?
I think people are so far removed from the act of killing that they're presented with this, you know, these images of these big, beautiful, remarkable animals being hoisted up on boats or whatever, and they're shocked. And, you know, well-meaning people are so far removed, they'll happily sit down to their roast lamb at dinner time, which is effectively eating a fucking puppy. And if they saw the images of how their little baby lamb was killed, with throat cut and pointing to Mecca or kosher being bled out or whatever, that would be they'd never eat lamb again. But we're so far removed from the act of killing that great whites, and I think the only question with great whites is, are they endangered or are they not? If they're endangered, of course you have to protect them. No one wants to have an extinct species. But if they're not endangered, no one's crying over killing tiger sharks. No one's crying over killing anything else.
Mm.
It's it seems absurd to lionize this animal. But I think it's the culture wars. You know, the people who might suggest a cull of great whites will probably do so quietly, or, you know, almost like voting for Trump.
Yeah.
And no one admits to voting for Trump. And the people who lionize the great white are probably identify on the left wing of the spectrum.
Yeah, I hate that it's been bundled up. Like, all those ideas have to be taken together. Like, if you think this, then you have to take the whole package on.
I know the whole right wing left wing divide is absurd. That you have a certain way for disparate issues.
Yeah.
Which leads us into the Tyler Wright's BLM protest.
Yeah.
Politics and sport, what do you think? I mean, I love it. I love any kind of fucking thing that makes sport, which is so dull and circular quite often, exciting and something you can comment on.
Yeah, totally. I do too. I think that was easy. The most entertaining, the most noteworthy, the most newsworthy thing about the Tweety Bird Coast Pro. So, yeah, I loved it.
That's nice.
Well, Chaz called it the Tweety Bird Coast Pro, didn't he?
I don't know. Did Chaz?
I did.
That's beautiful.
But did you, Steve, were you moved by Tyler's protest?
Did no, you think it wasn't. It was
right place, right time?
Yeah, look, I can't say I was moved by it, to be honest. I was thinking, well, you know, what next? Okay, let's see what happens now. I mean, what possible concrete action could follow from that? And then, you know, then I could possibly move. But I wasn't moved at the time. What about you?
I mean, it was funny. I went in, I guess, straight away into the World Surf League Instagram comments. Did you go take a peek at those?
No, only vicariously through comments on the comments.
I mean, it was a wild bloodletting, and I know that it's probably not representative necessarily of the WSL's fan, maybe, but it, and not that, I don't know, it just seemed like, wow, way too honest to goodness, really exacerbate your audience. It's not like the WSL has an existing audience outside more or less white males, right? I mean, who's watching it besides white males?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right leading white males, probably. And to really doggedly go after him was either brave or decidedly idiotic.
Yeah, I think that was a timing thing. I mean, and possibly more so in America, where the whole sort of like there was just such a backlash to the you know, Black Lives Matter thing, when all the rooting and, you know, the sort of the looting and the rioting and the protesting turned ugly. Sorry?
Did you say rooting? What the fuck? That's all right.
Still thinking of that baby goat, that male goat. Don't bend over in front of a male goat.
Oh, yeah, I can't stop thinking about the goat giving a golden shower to his buddy.
Yeah. Oh, right in front of him. I can't believe I had to find out what a male goat was from a pair of Melbourne lesbians. I was just, I felt so embarrassed.
But the great thing about the Tyler thing was you had the world champion of a historically white supremacist sport dropping your knee at a contest funded by a white American billionaire, part owner of a former slave plantation, to protest systemic white racism and capitalism.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
glorious.
For a league, you know, I've been to the Santa Monica office a few times, and it ain't a bastion of diversity. I mean, I don't understand how to go so tokeny, which without, I mean, come on. Like, what is the World Surf League? I guess to your point, Steve, what are they actually doing? What concrete move was made other than, I think they thought we're symbolically jumping on the right side of history here without much thought to, wait, who's our audience? And how, if we really do believe this, we better be backing it up. We better be honest to goodness trying to diversify. I mean, look at the CT. Besides Brazilians and sometimes Mikey February, you got no one.
No one.
Hey, Steve, what's your first thought when you hear the number 439 Aboriginal deaths in custody? As a journalist, what's the first thing you think?
I just think, well, you know, well, that's terrible. That's tragic.
Yeah, but do you think, well, how many total deaths in custody, how many non-Indigenous deaths, and what percentage is it, and how does it compare to the population, the prison population? That's the first time I thought, fuck, 439 Aboriginal people killed, that's fucked. Oh, wait a sec, how many non-Indigenous people? So you look it up, and it's really hard to find, because the, you know, the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody found that you're more likely to die in police custody if you're non-Indigenous. So 2,605 people have died in police custody in Australia since 1979, and around 500 of those have been non-Indigenous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is what makes it such a murky, muddy pond for the WSL to just jump into, because, I mean, you can only compare this, I don't know, you tell me if there's any other historical comparison, but the only one that I could come up with is Tom Carroll, Tom Curran and Shane Aran boycotting South Africa because of apartheid, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just an open and shut case, right? There's no one going to say, hang on a minute, apartheid's pretty fucking good. We should, you know, like, no one's going to quibble over that, right?
Yeah, so you had Hitler in the 40s and you had apartheid in the 90s.
Yeah, so that's just 80s. Straight down the line. That's fucked. That's evil. Let's just protest. Let's just end that shit.
Yeah. But,
I mean, these issues are just seem much murkier and much more divisive and, yeah, just a dangerous pond for the WSL to jump into.
No, you get Chaz. You're in Cabo San Lucas.
I'm in Cabo San Lucas. I'll just go. So to me, so arrogantly, thoughtlessly, I mean, of course, everything they do just seems for the image, for the signal. It doesn't seem like they're trying to shift surfing in or professional surfing in any great way. There's no, you know, more opportunity. Hey, we're going to make a thing for either, you know, Aboriginal Australians or inner city American youth or whatever. We're going to make pathways for them to get onto the CT or to the US. It's nothing. It's same old, same old. It's just, oh, we have an image that we can push out and look good, which is the worst part of that, I think, is just the pure bald-faced sheer virtue signal is pretty ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's right. If they put out, say, oh, we're going to do an African circuit in Liberia, Senegal, and Gambia, right? Oh. And then we're going to take a couple of people from them, we're going to seed them into the QS, and, you know, they could do something meaningful for sure. But they don't. So, yeah, pure bald-faced virtue signal, totally.
So is it an empty gesture, Steve?
Yeah, I don't want to totally write off Tyler Wright's authenticity because did you hear a post-win interview on the back of the ski?
No, I missed everything, Stephen.
Yeah, okay. So she came out and said how much that really racial injustice and inequality really meant to her. And I think, okay, well, she means it. So I don't want to totally write off her gesture. And then I think, well, if the WSL is just backing her because, you know, she's maybe one of the biggest stars in the game, and so they had to back her. Then, yeah, I'm prepared to take it at face value and just see what happens. But sorry, what was the question?
I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember what the question was. But
I totally agree with you, Steve. That Tyler's her doing it, I don't have any issue with that. I think it seems like the WSL really hung her out to dry, though. By using her as their token for this thing without doing anything themselves. And So she's the one, I don't know, they use that image and really push that out without doing anything themselves. Nothing against Tyler, but I find it very problematic the way the World Surf League like took it on and pushed it out. And they got hammered for it, I think, in the thoughtless way that they did it, and won't do anything. They won't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a bit unfortunate from their point of view because of the timing, because the whole, you know, the Floyd thing had sort of created this massive groundswell of support, and then everything had sort of like festered and turned a bit ugly. And if she'd been back a couple of months, I think it would have, the gesture would have been received in a different way. Do you think?
I mean, I don't even know. The people who are like the backlash to BLM and all that, I don't get either. Like, are you kidding me? Like, African-Americans and Black people in general, people of color or whatever in America have been so routinely oppressed for so long that what do you think is going to happen? Like, of course they're going to fucking start burning shit down. And to wag your finger at that and say you should be more respectful toward the masters is also ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous to me. I mean, not BLM, the rage, I understand. Tyler Wright and the WSL trying to co-opt that rage is something that I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable bonfire of white guilt meets use of victimhood for political and financial gain, I think.
Yeah, okay.
in your story about the BLM thing, you said a reason black kids in Australia don't surf is the cost of real estate.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's full of shit because plenty of poor kids around the country surf, and Maroubra's housing commission and the Gold Coast, fuck, no one has any money except for a few people on the beachfront. And there's plenty of poor people in the Northern Rivers where you live.
Not really.
So there is, mate. And so I think it's a cultural thing. Like, you know, when we spoke to Bobby Martinez, he spoke about getting heat from his Mexican bros because he was involved in a white boy pussy sport. So I think that's the reason why people of color don't surf, because it's a white boy pussy sport. What do you think?
Yeah, there might be something to that. But I'm still going to defend my claim because, I mean, I look at Byron Bay. There used to be a really strong Aboriginal surfing community in Byron. And then, you know, when the Hollywood stars all came in and started virtue signaling about their sort of vegan lifestyles and the price of real, you need $1 million to buy a house, they all got shunted out to Casino and Mullumbimby. Well, it's just harder to go surfing when you live 50 Ks inland. And, you know, that's been repeated all over Australia. People, I think poorer people have been shunted away from the beach.
But that's a very recent thing. You know, it's the last 10, 15 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And there wasn't, and it's funny because, you know, when we talk about, you know, black kids or whatever in Australia, it's Aboriginal Australians, which would equate to Native American in America, not African Americans, which is, is a comparison I think that's sort of avoided. So Chaz, where are the Native, who sticks up for the Native Americans? Why aren't the Native Americans surfing?
Because they all got tossed out to reservations in the middle of the country years and years ago.
Yeah. They got the best wave pool in the world.
That's right. There's Native Americans out at Surf Ranch. That's the damn thing. WSL should open. I mean, you got Tyler Wright putting her fist up for 439 seconds, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
38? How many?
39, wasn't it?
Probably 40 by now.
Yeah. That was a fucking good effort to hold that wrist up. You see how shaky her arm got? I mean, that was impressive.
But imagine though, WSL with all these wave pools, the one there where the wetlands is going to be in Australia, they could open all that stuff up. I mean, that would be the way to do it, to your point, Derek, I suppose, is if you want Native Americans to surf, then there you go. But who wants to, right? I mean, which of them, you would have to honestly convince, I think, somebody, hey, you want to go surfing? It's really fun. It's really hard. The barrier to entry, it's going to take you years to even halfway enjoy it. I mean, at some point, I honestly do think that, surfing is a sort of masochistic thing where it's hard to convince somebody, you're going to love this, trust me, because you either kind of get the weird bug or don't. But I don't know that it has to do with privilege or being close to it or anything like that as much, right?
I agree. I think it's got nothing to do with privilege. It's just a pussy white sport.
But even the people, even the pussy white men who get into it, I mean, why do we get into it, right? I don't know. Like, I don't know why it hooked me. It was miserable. It was miserable in Oregon. And I don't know why I paddled out day after day after day into freezing cold closeouts and why I, you know, obsess about it to this day. Like, I don't understand what's not, I guess, wrong with me, right? And so to try to go convince an Aboriginal kid or a Native American or an African-American youth or whatever, hey, I got this thing you're going to love. Actually, it totally mostly sucks 90% of the time, but you should really pick it up and do this for the rest of your life. You'll mostly dislike it.
What about you, Steve? Why did you start surfing?
I was just thinking of that while Charlie was talking, and you know, like, I was in Queensland and we went to the Gold Coast, and I was a little kid, and all I remember is just this beautiful, sparkling Gold Coast day in the 70s. Like, do you remember the, I don't know, this feeling of Gold Coast in the 70s? It was just, you know, meter maids and just like, yeah, just this feeling was amazing. And I just took my dad's esky lid and I just walked across the road to the beach and just started, you know, riding the shore break on his esky lid. And I don't know, that just got me hooked. I don't know why. It just, there it was.
Did you get a feeling from it, or was it the image of surfing and or did it make you feel wonderful?
It was just this feeling, and even to this day, it's like a big part of the enjoyment of surfing for me is aesthetic. And you know, when I see that sparkling blue water, and I just go, "Yeah, I'm fucking out." You know what I mean? I look at cold grey water and I went, "No, that's shit." Like, I wouldn't keep surfing if I was stuck in England or Sweden or fucking Great Lakes. I'd be like, "Nah." It just, that's not for me. So yeah, there is a sort of something about the beauty of it that just sucked me in.
Being in Cabo San Lucas, where the water is as warm as the air, it's just perfection with fun, you know, playful little waves and all that. Like, yeah, it's the greatest thing on earth. And down here, but when I go home to California, I think, oh my goodness, it's chilly on the warmest days, even in Southern California. It's eggy and crowded. Like, to actually go get good surf, you have to go, you put your game face on and go compete for something that's not that great to begin with. My 7-year-old daughter has started boogie boarding. She's got boogie fever.
Yeah.
And I think, why am I, like, you know, seeing Josh Kerr's Kia Sierra Kerr and yeah, Jackson Dorian and all these guys, I'm thinking, screw that. You should just stay boogieing. Boogie the rest of your life, because it's about as fun as it gets right there.
What about you, Derek? What got you into it?
What got me into surfing was a movie called Puberty Blues in the 80s. And it was a lifestyle, because I come from suburban Perth. And I, you know, ride motorbikes and play footy and play cricket. And then I was 12 and I saw this movie, and it was set in Cronulla. And the men... it was all men, had hot girlfriends, and they lived this exciting life, and they just disappeared in the ocean, had this exciting experience, fucked chicks, got drunk, died of drug overdoses. It seemed terribly exciting to me, and I wanted to have a part of that lifestyle. So I, similar to why I played guitar for a long time, was just chicks mainly.
Thought you I'd wanted get a piece of it.
Yeah, and then because Perth wasn't the best place to grew up being a surfer, you know, the water might have sparkled, but the waves certainly didn't fire. But yeah, something about it. And, you know, surfing really feels like an old friend to me.
Yeah.
And it can do so many other things, but it feels like you jump in the ocean and your body stretches out and you feel pretty good. And even if you have to give yourself a little pep talk beforehand so you don't punch someone's fins out, it does feel like an old friend. And there is something terribly magical about paddling in the ocean and feeling currents under you and you know, movement and stuff. And when I surf, I really do like the technical aspect of it. And all I think about is how to turn better or how to do bad throwaway airs. But there is something magical about the ocean that no other sport really has. And I know rock climbing has a certain feeling and all these other sports have these great feelings. But surfing does seem like it has a fourth dimension.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you open that up to oppressed classes, right? I mean, that's the thing, is that's what the whole, I mean, what do you tell them? But you, like, if they don't want to go in the ocean.
It's like a press classes have to ask the question and then you can give an answer. But no, I don't think anyone's sort of busting down the door from a press classes to go surfing. And that's the thing, you know, the call for diversity, the door is open. Yeah. You know? And it's just a cultural thing, I think, you know.
Possibly.
So on more exciting matters, the Coffee family. So they've been monetizing their asses lately. Ellie Jean Coffee and now her sister Holly Days have got provocative websites. Ellie Unlocked, Holly Days Unlocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, for small stipend, $10 a month. You can see their buzzies and see them tickling themselves.
Yeah.
Have you signed up, Stephen?
That's a negative, Derek. No, I won't be, because you told me that the cancellation policy is very difficult. So once you're in, you can't get out.
Yeah, well, I looked up the cancellation policy because I thought maybe I'll go in there and just examine it, for, you know, and see some of the offerings are pretty very provocative, like zip busted, extra sexy wet peach, topless on the beach in my G-string, booty looking extra juicy. Dripping wet for you, point of view, legs spread, grabbing my tits at the beach.
Yeah.
Ooh, extra oily peach, ready to be spanked, topless doggy style at the beach. Yeah. Gorgeous photo yet. Jungle girl, where have all my clothes gone?
I wonder who writes that copy. Is there a gig writing copy for that?
I think it's probably them. They do a very good job.
Yeah.
They're very good at photography and very good at copywriting.
Yeah.
And Ellie Jean had some good content too. Nipple exposed, completely topless with my legs spread open. Wish you were holding my hand while I sip this wine, giving you an upskirt view with no panties. Tell me, but they got SEO fucking dialed.
It's very aspirational.
I wonder, it seems to me like, you know, the popularity of OnlyFans, that it's a genuine career path now to make money from your beautiful physique.
Yeah.
And the stigma's totally gone.
Seems that way.
Which is a great thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, you're a Calvinist, aren't you? What's your point of view on it?
I mean, I don't know. It just seems like if you've fallen there, how old are they? Are they like 22, 23?
Yeah. Holly Day is probably 22 and Ellie Jean is 25.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you've hit more or less rock bottom career-wise at 25.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only down, right? There's only more porn, I reckon, at that point, which I think, you know, some women talk highly of their careers in porn, but I can't imagine that it's a very wonderful, fulfilling career. And so it just seems like you've really...
Depends if you like cock or not.
Yeah.
What was that, Steve?
Depends if you like cock or not, wouldn't it?
Depends if you like cock.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you rather, honestly, be a bartender, be a waitress, be anything? But I suppose you wouldn't. I suppose they're happy what they're doing.
Well, you can
so
make
you're saying if we were in their shoes, what would you do?
Yeah, I would think that having some sort of semblance of being able to do something else, you can have if you're, you know, serving, bussing tables or serving coffee. Whereas once you're there, you pretty much you're there for the rest of your life.
I guess it depends what else brings meaning into your life and if that's financing that in a satisfactory way that bartending wouldn't. I mean, if you've got to spend, I don't know, what's the time commitment to do a photo shoot and then write the copy?
With you,
I mean, I bet it's nonstop.
You reckon?
You mean completely topless with your legs spread open?
Yeah, how long would it take for a photo shoot?
Oh, God, I reckon probably 10 minutes.
10 minutes and then how long to write the copy?
Oh, 30 seconds.
Okay, so there's your like 10 minutes and 30 second time commitment per day.
No, because it's Instagram. It's all, it's that nonstop. I bet they're doing more than just one a day. I bet they're, I don't know, 8 or 9 hour days at the very least.
Well, surely not.
For sure. I remember talking to Anastasia Ashley, of course, does partake in this form, but looking at her influencer life, I think she was honestly working 16 hours a day just to keep the lights on, more or less.
Yeah, but Derek's saying that the time commitment when you go to that next level up in terms of OnlyFans is much less because you don't have to put as much content out there.
But I think you still have to keep people funneling people into OnlyFans. Still have to keep up all the other social media things.
I don't think you do. I think once
people get with you
on OnlyFans, you can forget about Instagram.
Once you've got the $10 a month coming in, then it's just, what is it, daily?
It's a river of gold. I'm thinking.
Mm. No way, because you got to keep new people coming in, right? So you bring new people in your existing platforms, which is for them Instagram and Facebook and whatever else they got going on. So you have to be always funneling people there, which means now you just have another job on top of your full-time job.
I think the boyfriend does all that, doesn't he? Or the dad?
Someone said that, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure who does the photos. Well, the videos, as James, our biz guy, Jazzy sent us, there's a lovely Ellie Jean Coffee video. You saw that, didn't you, Chaz?
I didn't see it.
On privateshows.net. Ellie's tickling herself naked.
Full-time, is what I'm saying.
She's fixing herself.
A full-time gig, Stephen Shearer.
Yeah, okay. Well, there goes that little romantic fantasy.
So, Stephen, would you, if you could get $1,000 a day, would you...
Absolutely.
I'd happily oil my ass up and
totally, mate.
Show my ass on private shows.
Sort of facility, or maybe rescue koalas, and then just spend the rest of the day just oiled up. It'd be perfect.
It'd be lovely. But you know, now that with the collapse of the surf industry funnel for sponsorships, it's probably going to be a popular route that surfers can go down.
Which is, who's the first boy going to go down into members only?
Do you think Kona Igarashi? He's beautiful.
He doesn't need to. It needs to be someone, a name was just going to come out of my mouth then, and I'm so glad it didn't, but I'd never be able to surf in this town again.
Oh, so it's a Linux head surfer, can we guess?
No.
Please, can we guess?
No.
Suck on your beer, son. Yeah, who's going to be
the first surfer? Derek?
I don't know. It's going to be someone who's pretty buff, it's going to appeal to the gay community, I think, because I don't think women have really got their heads around paying for dudes jerking off yet, but other dudes are pretty happy to watch guys jerk off. I'm not sure. It'd be someone probably quite well hung, probably nice tan skin, built. I don't know. Can't think of anyone. Can't imagine anyone naked.
Dino?
Who do you think? Dino and Dino?
I mean, I think Dino and
Dino. You say Dino and Dino, the fucking hell.
I mean, Dino and Dino has the name for it, let's be honest.
He does.
Cougar gay porn.
He's built for that industry. Jesus.
Is there a male gay version of a cougar? Derek, you'd know the terminology, wouldn't you?
Not so much a gay, but there's dilfs. Chaz is a dilf. Chaz was a dilf at Disneyland.
I am. I'm a dilf of Disneyland.
Did you see that, Steve?
No. What happened?
So dilfs of Disneyland, dads would like to fuck. Yeah. Dilfs of Disneyland was all hot dads photographed at Disneyland with the kids and on an Instagram account, and Chaz started it because he was a tattoo.
I did. Sexy. I even made the news on it.
Cool.
Did you?
Yeah, the news, the local news did a feature on the account, and my picture was the featured news. Yeah, the one the news used.
So you're the one step away from appearing on OnlyFans, really.
Yeah. Maybe it's Chaz. Yeah. Maybe it's Chaz is going to be the first guy to go.
I mean, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
$1,000 a day.
Oiled up for 10 minutes a day with some sweet copy.
I'll write the copy for you.
Does sound good.
Yeah.
The only problem is you oiled up. It's hard to go surfing. You have to wear a wetsuit.
Yeah, really. I would imagine it takes a long time to get that oil off.
Yeah, and in particular if you're oiling your thighs.
Yeah.
And you'd always have to wear a wetsuit.
It'd have to be, couldn't you just oil the back half of you and leave the front half unoiled?
Well, the front half is an important part of the show. Steven?
Is it?
Steven?
Couldn't he just be like a back half specialist?
Yeah, I think to be a popular male star in that realm, you really do need to show both sides of your physique.
Yeah. Okay. I'll trust your judgment on that.
Yeah. So Patagonia, on stitching in the waistband of their organic stand-up shorts, they have the message, vote the assholes out.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. It's got enough wriggle room in there that I don't think they're going to get too caught by the MAGA crowd.
I don't think the MAGA crowd buys Patagonia clothes.
It could be a MAGA. It could be a MAGA call to arms.
Yeah,
sure. Exactly.
Both ways.
So that's right. Could go both ways.
Asshole is undefined.
Yeah, exactly.
You're true. So, Chess, tell us you're an American. Why did the Democrats give the last 4 years, the last 6 years, I guess? Why have the Democrats given people a reason not to vote for them? First, you had Hillary with deplorable statement. Then you got crazy old man Biden. I mean, Kamala, she's great. But why would they put Biden giving people a very good reason not to vote for the Democrats?
I truly have no idea, especially knowing, like being able to plan for it from minute one when Trump, you know, won the election v. Hillary, knowing, okay, we really blew it here. We thought we knew what the electorate wanted. We thought we knew what our electorate wanted. We clearly did not excite neither our base nor anyone outside our base. So let's figure out why and let's rectify. I think they really got caught up, honestly, trying to deep six Bernie as opposed and progressives in the wing rather than, you know, really sorting out where the party was going. I think the Republicans, for better or worse, embraced what their party wanted, which was Trump. And the Democrats seem like they were fighting against it and continually. Like the fact that it wasn't Bernie and that it's Biden seems like another real gaffe. And it should have been Bernie last year or last election too.
It seems pretty clear to me, though, as an outsider, that the Electoral College math is never going to add up for a ultra-progressive candidate like Bernie, though, isn't it? I mean, he's obviously going to win all the big Democrat majorities in the East and West, but he's not going to get anything in the flyover states, is he?
It did for Trump, though. I think Bernie appeals to... That's the thing, is I think everybody has this feeling like a centrist is what the flyovers want. Yeah. And I think Trump laid that directly on its ear, where you don't really know what they want. Like to think, and you know, for pundits and city folk to think they know is to me the height of arrogance, right? Where they somehow, for some reason, fell in love with the most, you know, I mean, childish, rich New Yorker ever. Who would have ever thought that would have happened?
Yeah,
like the fact that Trump appeals to the Rust Belt is patently ridiculous, but yeah. that's who they like. And so I think the Dems should have let the reins off and just see. I mean, I think Bernie would have won. I think without fudging against Hillary, and I think without fudging this time, Bernie would have won.
Yep. Okay.
It's interesting, though, that I guess there's internal polling and they probably polled and Bernie at least is a candidate of integrity. They must have polled and just said, fuck, we're going to get slaughtered if we have Bernie. We better go with the safe option, huh?
Yeah, but what are they looking at? I mean, again, Trump laid polling bare. I mean, the fact that polling works anymore, I think is, again, patently ridiculous. I think they have no fucking idea.
But maybe they looked at the British election with Jeremy Corbyn, who is a lunatic, but he has, and Bernie, I don't think, is a lunatic, but they do have similarities, and they watched the Labour Party just get smashed in the UK.
Sure, but again, like, well, to me, the Trump destroyed any sort of sense, and to pretend that there is sense after Trump is to be just ridiculous. I mean, they should have really, really, again, let it out and saw what they had. Even if they were going to lose, they could at least know what the party is, because I don't think they still know. It's certainly not Biden.
No, and it's interesting because Kamala Harris, you know, the debates, whatever, and pretty much described Biden as a rapist.
Yeah.
So she's going to have...
He's got wandering hands, hasn't he?
Apparently. Apparently.
Got a problem with his hands.
He likes getting close.
Chaz, do you think that Trump can do a Nixon, run a law and order campaign like Nixon did in 68?
No, because to me I don't know how the Dems are letting him get away with claiming he's the one who can fix all this when this was all on his watch, right? I mean, Nixon came in on law and order.
Yeah.
Trump has been president for 4 years, and if everything's falling apart, then weren't you the president for 4 years? So I honestly don't understand how the Dems, it just seems like silly messaging from them saying not to hold him accountable, to at least saying, wait, if you're going to play this line that you're the one who's going to be firm on this, why haven't you been firm? The country is burning down under your watch.
Did you hear Trump's inauguration speech?
In 4 years ago?
Yeah, the American Carnage speech.
The recent one?
Yeah, his 2016 inauguration speech.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was inaugurated.
Yes, I heard.
Yeah, I mean, that was almost a prophecy, wasn't it? I mean, he pledged to end it, but it's almost a prophecy of what was to happen.
Precisely, and I don't understand how the Democrats can't say, wait a second. Yeah, again, Nixon coming in 68, is a lot different than Trump in after 4 years.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was looking at the speech now, and it's interesting. This United States is your country. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. January the 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. You came by the tens of millions to become part of a historic movement the likes of which the world has never seen. At the center of this movement is a crucial conviction that a nation exists to serve its citizens. Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are the just and right, reasonable demands of a righteous public. This American carnage stops right here and right now.
Yeah.
We are one nation. There's Trump, fucking hell. Trump should be out in his ear. But it's going to be interesting, Chaz, in November.
Sure will be. Especially, you see Ruth Bader died today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ruth Bader died. No way.
Yep.
She's our, mascot.
Yeah, she was our mascot.
Holy fuck.
Yep. So it's going to be a crazy 2 months even of, a lot of, fighting as far as the Supreme Court goes. Which
will they appoint a new, can he appoint a new Supreme Court judge before the election?
I think theoretically he has the numbers, but yeah. I don't see Republicans being lockstep. I think enough centrist Republicans will have a queasy stomach, especially after, when Obama was, I think Obama's still had a year in office and the Republicans refused to let him appoint somebody.
Yeah.
And so I think the hypocrisy may be a bit too much for center-leaning Republicans to stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And what else we got, boys? Anything else thrilling you to pieces about the surf world?
No, but it was interesting. Just when you were talking about what drew you into surfing, this lifestyle, I do have to make a slight admission on this sort of whole white shark thing. It does add this element of danger to surfing, which I have to admit, on one level, I do find quite thrilling.
Do?
Yeah.
But your Zoom connection then just fully locked up. It was like a great white. It just swooped on you. Die, motherfucker. Boom. Are you excited by great whites, are you, mate? I don't know if I can remind you of that when your leg's bitten off.
Yeah, no, I know. It's not. It's so hard to admit that you sort of got complicated feelings about something now, isn't it, in this modern era? You have to be one way or the other.
You're not allowed.
You can't say, well, yeah, look, I mean, I'm sort of fascinated and repelled and thrilled by great whites, but I also wouldn't mind seeing them fish down a little bit.
You like rough sex too, don't you?
That's for the next intro. I'll tell you what I do like, though. I like...
Oh, Steve Shearer. Thank you so much. Steve
Shearer bought hardcover from America.
Got it imported directly from America.
Thank you, Steve.
Hard copy.
How much did it cost you, Steve?
$54.
$54
Oh, I'm sorry.
Have you read it?
I'm 62 pages in.
Are you excited?
I'm having so much fun with it. The forward with Petraeus was just fucking hilarious. I mean, it was worth it for that alone.
Oh, thanks, Steve.
I'm going to do a review.
Can you remind our probably diminishing audience your experience with General Petraeus, who he was, and how you came to be in contact with him?
Yeah, General Petraeus was the head of the CIA for a minute, and before that he was, I think, head of CENTCOM or whatever, had some big role in the Middle East, in Iraq and all that, and then head of the CIA, and came undone when he had an affair with his biographer. I think Broadstone something was her name. I was, for some unknown reason, invited to interview him at a fabulous financial conference where I was supposed to be the wild card. So interview him on stage. He was supposed to give insight into the Middle East, I think. But I just sat on stage the entire time thinking, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He was so in the pocket of Saudi Arabia. Mm. It was patently obvious and it was absurd. What he was saying about Saudi Arabia was honestly absurd.
What was he saying about Saudi Arabia?
I mean, it was just like, they are a great ally and they are the future of the Middle East and blah, 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 where anybody with half an eyeball can see it's just a decadent, corrupt, awful thing that is only propped up by the U.S. And if the U.S. wasn't, you know, if they weren't spending billions of dollars on U.S. war machines, they would be rolled over. I mean, the Houthis in Yemen give them a run for their money. And the Houthis have like 2 cents and half a machine gun.
They're pretty much just spitting at the Saudi planes, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the Saudis are the absolute worst. They are the honest to goodness worst. And yeah, so sitting on stage, hearing him talk it up, I just got to sit there and roll my eyes and cough and make lewd gestures.
It was a very funny scene. It was extremely, I wasn't expecting that, actually. I was just like, oh my God, this is fucking so good.
Thanks.
Who was the other guy that got into trouble in the Middle East, the other general who, you know, there was the Rolling Stone article and he was bad-mouthing Obama.
Stanley McChrystal. Yeah. So my friend was actually McChrystal's press guy. Yeah. And so I think he fell on his sword after the Rolling Stone thing.
Yeah.
But he has a great story. He was the one who set up the Rolling Stone interview and everything.
Wow. And what did Stanley do wrong that got him all sacked and shit?
He was bad mouthing Obama, wasn't he?
He was. He bad mouthed Obama.
As a general rule. Obama.
Yeah, I think it was about Obama's. I mean, it was all correct. It was about Obama's Middle Eastern strategy. Hmm. Well, I mean, it was really gentle, but it was, in that day and age, was, was cancelable. Hmm.
Glory days, huh?
Yeah. Is surf journalism immune to cancel culture?
It totally is.
Chaz, do you miss Obama? I miss Obama.
I mean, I miss... no. I don't miss his... Yeah, he really did have bad Middle Eastern policy, which is something near and dear to my heart.
So how do you feel about Trump's success in the Middle East? Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, normalizing relations with Israel. It's gotten very short shrift in the mainstream press, but it's big developments.
Sure, I mean, major developments. I don't know how I feel about each and every one, but yeah, I mean, he's done more than most, for sure, than most, definitely done more than most U.S. presidents. Again, though, I don't know if I like it all. Not that my opinion matters.
What gives you pause?
I mean, I think just moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem is silly.
It's provocative, or?
I mean, it's just pointlessly provocative. Like, who cares? Tel Aviv, you know, Derek, is a beautiful city.
Tel Aviv is such a sexier city than Jerusalem. Jerusalem's a fucking ghetto.
Yeah, and so this token move for part of your base that's just unnecessarily provocative to me was just bad form.
It must be hard to be a right wing in America because traditionally right wingers have hated Jews.
Yeah.
And then to suddenly have that bundled into your little grab bag of opinions. Oh, we like Jews now.
I mean, that's the thing. I think it tears them apart too, right? Because I think it's only the evangelical Christians who are really pro Israel. But then to be pro Israel, you know, you can be pro apartheid too, right? I mean, you could. I think the Israel thing as colonizers, white colonizers in a brown land, et cetera, appeals to, has multiple appealing points for the far right.
Isn't, don't Jewish people classified as non-white now?
I mean, I think that the Ashkenaz, the Ashkenaz are all stinking Euro.
Hmm. Yeah, but Sephardi are all, you know, North African. And
exactly, but I think, what is Israel? I think that Israel is majority Ashkenazi, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's my understanding.
Beautiful place. Gotta love it.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. You know, when the footage came out of the Charlottesville rally, the Unite the Right, I thought the focus of the hatred would be, you know, Muslims or something, but it was all Jews will not replace us.
Yeah.
I thought, aren't the Jews on your side? I thought, what happened there? Really?
They didn't get a briefing. Listen, guys, we've changed our stance on the Jewish people. Okay, we're afraid. I know we gassed. I know we killed 6 million of them, but that's a roundabout sort of thing. But it's funny because
we thought we were making cuckoo clocks. We didn't know they were gas chambers.
Yeah. What's that sound? Jesus Christ!
I just asked Chaz if surfing journalism was immune from cancel culture, and he said yes.
But totally. I don't think you heard.
What do you think?
There's no one to cancel us. That's the thing. Because surfing is such an ultra niche sport.
It's like, I honestly think you could say for years, you could go on a provocative screed for 3 years saying anything bad, and people would vaguely maybe say, well, that wasn't a very nice thing to say. And that would be as bad as it got.
Yeah. Because the WSL is operating as if they're like in full thrall to cancel culture, are they?
Yeah. But nobody cares.
Yeah.
Not one person cares.
Yeah. Hallelujah.
Hey, Steve. Hallelujah. So, Steve, let's go out. I want to hear your opinion where you think pro surfing and the WSL is going to be in 18 months' time. So, it's start of 2022. Where is surfing? Where is pro surfing? Where is the WSL?
Half strength tour, bunch of sort of regional tours operating in their own sort of orbits with a no unified world champion.
So it's like boxing.
Yeah.
And what about
and a sort of professional UFC style sort of man on man or small group style tournaments.
Which makes sense, huh? You see a surfer go, this guy is obviously good enough to challenge John at Pipe.
Yeah.
Let's have a card.
Yeah. 2 hours, John, or you know, you could easily do it in Indonesia. Obviously, you could just, there's enough high quality surf. We could just rock up and say, okay, you're on a waiting list. You're going to see John versus Dane at, 6 foot rifles. Okay. And here's the day. You got 36 hours notice and you plug in your $9 and you sit there and watch it for a couple of hours.
And Stephen, tell me, Great Whites, 5 years time, North Coast is going to be, I know you find it sexy and all that sort of shit, but if there's no nets, there's no selective culling or whatever, what do you think the situation is going to be like in 5 years time? Do you think it'll be like WA where it seems to have backed off a bit, or do you think it'll be?
I don't know. I'm just trying to, I mean, the numbers are only going up here, whereas they did seem to, everything stabilized and quietened off in WA, didn't it? So.
Except for there was one at the farm a couple of months ago.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. So maybe it's just got, and you know, it's still going on in Esperance, I suppose, wasn't there? 2017, 2018. So yeah, just more and more attacks, mate. More and more encounters.
What do you think about the trope that gets thrown around quite a bit is great whites are apex predators, which they're not, because orcas will happily eat their livers.
Yeah.
And you can't remove them from the food chain, which no one's suggesting anyway. But I was thinking about it. If you took them out, what would it mean? It just mean more baby humpbacks, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a sort of the trophic cascade theory, where if you take out or thin out the apex predator, then you're going to get repercussions down the line in the ecosystem. But I've never really seen that argument fleshed out to say, well, actually, what would that mean if instead of 50 great whites, there was 10? Or I've never really seen, well, we're going to have more dolphins and more humpbacks, right?
Which is the most beautiful thing in the world. Everyone loves a humpback and a dolphin.
So we're moving from a ecosystem, a surfing ecosystem, dolphins and whales, to one, you know, we'll say dolphins are that inshore apex predator, you know, absent orcas, to one dominated by great whites. I'm like, oh, I know which one I prefer.
And can you imagine living on the North Coast in Byron Bay or the Gold Coast, and you're sitting there and there's this fucking baby humpback swimming around, dolphins, happy flippers, making that nice noise, dancing on their fins and shit. What a beautiful world that would be.
Absolutely.
Imagine how many more surfers, though.
Well, that's true.
There can't be any more. I don't think people are being discouraged from surfing.
I think they have.
You really think so? Well, just super recently? Or do you think?
Yeah, it goes in waves. It definitely goes in waves. But, yeah, there's definitely repercussions and crowd numbers after an attack, for sure.
But then it all gradually swells out again into the next attack, huh?
Starts to swell out. But, you know, you get safety in numbers too. You get clumping, crowding. You know, you can go surf these beach breaks here all along here. You can go sit out there all by yourself if you want. And we'll do for the next couple of years.
And would you like to sit out there by yourself, Steve?
I don't. No way.
If you were the state premier of New South Wales, what would your action be?
Well, I mean, I'm on the record as saying I think the smart drum lines are the best compromise we got. We put a 20-0 hook in them. They get thrashing around for a while. They get some discomfort and they get tagged and dragged out to sea and, you know, dumped. They just get roughed up. So they're more cautious. They're not so inquisitive around people.
I'd vote for you, Steve.
Yeah, I think that's the best compromise position we've got right now. But if you've got a better one, I'd love to hear it.
No, like I said, I'd vote for you. I think it's a lovely suggestion. Jazz, you vote for Steve?
I'm voting for Steve.
Vote one, Steve Shearer.
You can write my copy.
Any D6 votes.
We'll do a quid pro quo. I'll write your copy for your gay fans only site and you could write my political copy, okay?
Perfect.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks, Jazz.
Thanks, Derek.
For you, boys.
A little bit south of Montgomery. Mama worked in the big house, and daddy, he worked for the county. I never had no learning until I turned 16. When Joe had to come up the river, y'all, Lord made a woman out of me.
Yes, he did.
Lord, he made a woman out of me.
Yeah.
I used to tease.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.